All right, and happy hour out there.
Everybody. I think you like to wait for the drum roll just because you like the way you sound on drums.
I do like the sound of that drum roll. You know what I like about it? It's really in sync with the guitar.
Oh, it's
exactly
perfect. It's
on
perfect.
Sync.
You and your buddy Rich.
It's like
y'all are perfect.
That's an old recording now. I guess it's about 12 years old now. We still play it from time to time. Well, welcome to American Hit Radio, everybody. You're listening to WHPC 90.3 FM coming out of Nassau Community College in Garden City, New York. And I'm here every Wednesday and Friday, I being Tom Ryan, of course, with me.
Oh, I thought you were going to say who I was.
I usually do.
It's me, Heidi.
My wife, Heidi Morales Ryan, of course, my lovely bride helping us out. And if you've tuned in at this time, any time in the past few years, you know what we're up to. On Friday, we call our show How Music Changed, where we look at some of the most important aspects of music culture from the past 100 years. But lately, the past year and change, we've been looking at Motown, playing every Motown A-side in
stunning.
Chronological order. Really has been stunning, right? It's been amazing. This is our 64th show doing
and
this.
And counting.
We're near the end. We're getting near the end.
Tick,
and this
tick,
show
tick.
Is kind of going to reflect that. You can just see that, you know, basically, once we hit the end of 1971, we're going to pretty much kick into hyperdrive and play the remaining hits for maybe the rest of the decade, and then we'll move on. But by 1971, things were changing a lot for Motown. And what we're going to see in this show, you're going to basically see why we're going to kick it into hyperdrive, unfortunately, because there's going to be a lot of stuff which reflects why there's not much reason to continue to play every A-side at this time. It's been a long road to get to this point. And that is more or less what this show is about, to show the curve of Motown, how it arced up. Wasn't always, you know, all, you know, smooth sailing. Even at their peak, there were plenty of songs that weren't hits. But right now we're seeing how that curve is turning down fairly drastically. And not that the music is bad, because it isn't. And it's just really it's not as relevant as it used to be. I think that's what I'm trying to say here.
Were you saying they didn't keep up with the times?
Well, there were hits, and the songs are still good, and maybe they even are keeping up with the times. But the problem was the audiences weren't caring as much anymore, at least not in America, and they weren't really influencing other artists as much as they had been. They're following trends, as they always really did to a large extent, but they weren't on top of their game as much as they had been. Maybe those are harsh words, but let's see if the show bears me out. In fact, the first track is a good example of what I'm trying to say. It's by the Supremes, the Diana Ross-less Supremes.
Okay. So who's singing her parts?
Well, actually, that's exactly what makes this very interesting, Heidi. This is the very first 45 ever issued by the Supremes, where the lead vocal is sung by Mary Wilson.
Oh.
Took a long time for that to happen.
Yeah.
So this features her on lead vocal. Not a bad song either, but... Unfortunately, the public didn't necessarily think so, and it stalled at number 71 on the pop charts. Not a good sign when the artist's name on the label was the Supremes. Here is that track, though, with Mary Wilson on lead vocals. It's called Touch.
You say you can't express yourself. Just keep doing what you're doing. Fancy words would only ruin it. Touch, that very special touch. If I satisfy you,
right. Now, after a career that had, by this point, already spanned, I guess the Supremes date from, it's been at least 10 years that they were singing for the label at this point, or pretty close to 10 years.
Yeah, I know,
anyway.
But it's a bit harsh to say, like, oh, well, it wasn't successful. Mary Wilson wasn't a good lead for the band. She obviously had a great voice.
Exactly. That's what was going to be my point.
I mean, and the fact that it took... For a long time, they were known as the no-hit Supremes, and that was with Diana singing lead. So
exactly
you
right,
know.
Exactly right. I mean, it just goes to show that things could have fallen in any number of ways.
They just needed to get some support, probably, and you know that's the number one complaint by most artists.
It's kind of really sad that a lot of people who were fans of the band even would have had to wait until this point to hear Mary Wilson and say, "Wow, I can really hear her now. I can see that she's not just like going baby, baby in the background."
Right, right.
You know? But unfortunately, the chart position probably made some people think otherwise, and that's just not fair because she really does sing well. What's interesting is one of the biggest fans of the Supremes was Elton John. And when this album came out, it's 1971, so Elton John is like pretty much a brand new entity.
Right.
He's the guy that provided the liner notes for their album. That was the title song, Touch. If you ever find the Supremes album from 1971 called Touch, look at the back side. You'll see the liner notes written by Elton John. 1971, how about that? Well, again, my point for today, that the theme here more or less for today is going to be watching how the superstars of the 60s are forced into somewhat less wonderful circumstances now that we are, you know, well into the 70s in 1971. Martha Reeves and the Vandellas is our next victim, although not quite as bad as the Supremes. In fact, really not nearly as bad, actually.
Amazing, because it seems like they've been struggling for quite some time now, too.
Exactly. The Martha Reeves and the Vandellas had been struggling for quite a while. But this song actually begins to help bring them back at least a little bit. I mean, they're not quite a vanishing act yet. This helps to keep them alive a little bit longer. This track did better than the Supremes track. It went up to number 53 on the pop charts and number 29 on the R&B charts. It actually went top 30 on the R&B, which is something. It's in fact, it's their first R&B hit of the 70s. It was written by The Corporation, the same group of writers that were responsible for the first songs that had launched the Jackson 5 to superstardom.
Oh, yeah.
Who
comprises a corporation? That's a Crofts and...
Oh, there were so many different people. It was, obviously, Berry Gordy was one of them. And the guy, Ardeen Taylor and... Davis, I think, was another guy. Pamela Davis. There were so many people.
Okay.
I can't even remember all their
names.
difficult for me to... I could probably... I'll give you a list. I'll email it to you.
Okay.
But
have your people call my people.
This is actually... Right, exactly. This... the way that they helped the Jackson 5, they figured maybe they could do the same thing for Martha. And it worked fairly well, as I said. It was sort of like a last gasp for Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. The name of the track is Bless You.
Let it of us.
All right. I thought my work week was over, but Heidi gave me some homework to do there. So we looked up a few.
On the break, you were doing your homework.
Well, I had mentioned Deke Richards as a member of the corporation and Berry Gordy, who, uh-huh. the label head who was as well. But it was also Al Marzell and Freddie Perren were the other two main members of the corporation. There were a few other people who may have floated in and out at various times.
Also Rands.
I would have sworn that Pam Sawyer was one of them. But it was mostly those four guys that were setting things up and wrote that song there for Martha Reeves. Give her a little bit of chart action. Now, this song, I'm going to tell you who it is, and you're going to, it won't mean a thing to you, Heidi, but okay. Then again, you never know. I don't know how good you can be sometimes. You surprise me. The song is by, credited to Jack Hammer, which I think is kind of funny. But actually, his name, he was born Earl Burroughs in New Orleans. And before he was famous, well, he was never really, I guess, particularly famous on his own, but he did write a pair of phenomenally long-lasting hits.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, Jack Hammer, a.k.a. Earl Burroughs, wrote Great Balls of Fire, imagine that, for Jerry Lee Lewis.
Okay.
And Fujiyama Mama.
Oh, wow.
Both of those songs.
I do love both of those songs.
I never even knew that they were both written by the same guy.
Me either.
So that's pretty incredible. Obviously,
should
Great Balls of Fire.
The liner notes on Wanda Jackson's record, huh?
Right. That was Wanda Jackson's probably her biggest hit, and one of Jerry Lee Lewis's biggest hits, that's for sure. So anyway, by 1971, at this point in Motown, he'd obviously been around for a while. What had happened, though, the way his career, the arc of his career was fairly weird. After he had those couple of hits, he eventually moved to Belgium sometime in the early 60s. And when he was in Belgium, he actually became Europe's version of Chubby Checker, releasing a whole slew.
It would have been better if he became Europe's version of Fats. Domino instead.
It would have been cooler.
Yeah, much.
But I say Chubby Checker because what he did in Europe was he released a whole slew of Twist records.
Oh.
And everybody, you know, he was the Twist King of Europe.
Okay.
So, well, we over here, we all knew Chubby Checker as the King of the Twist. Actually, over there, it was Earl Burroughs or Jack Hammer, who was so famous over there for the same reason. Well, he's working out of Belgium doing all of this. And after a few years, after that whole thing ran its course, he started recording different tracks. Obviously, the Twist thing can only go so far,
right.
You know. So he recorded this song sometime in the late 60s. It was eventually picked up by an English subsidiary label. And from there, it eventually was picked up by Motown. So it took a couple of years for it to get over to this point.
Transferred.
With Motown.
So
the song is called Color Combination. And I guess you can tell it's European influence by the way it spells color, because color is spelled C-O-L.
With a U.
Yeah, O-U-R. Exactly. So here is Jack Hammer with Color Combination.
White boy, black girl. If this song is ever played on the radio, right or wrong, it's been said so many times before. Why do they try to keep us apart? Combination. Love is blind, the prophet said, long, long time ago. Love goes in deeper than skin and opens up the door. Don't deny, rainbows only love
combination. If you care what neighbors think about your children's love, don't despair.
Wow.
Cafe au lait, baby.
Ain't that the truth? Jack Hammer with Color Combination. Kind of like takes the Bobby Taylor and the Vancouver's theme of Does Your Mama Know About Me kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, the interracial dating thing. And then adds like an Edwin Starr sort of a feel to it. It's like, Bobby Taylor meets war kind of thing.
Yeah, it definitely had some funkiness to it.
Fairly cool. But unfortunately, not much chart action here in America. We do have a hit today, though. And that's this next song. It had taken a while. Obviously, the Jackson 5's career, they had become hugely famous, the first superstars for the label in the new decade. But as things were progressing, their last track wasn't really doing as well as they had hoped. Maybe Tomorrow did not really do stunning. And they thought that maybe it's time for Michael Jackson to go solo, although he's only 14 years old. So it seems like maybe it isn't that good of an idea. The thing that pushed them over the brink, though, was that the Osmond brothers, who were obviously a mock-up of the Jackson Five, almost
they're literally whitewashing.
Quite literally, yes, yes. And they were having a lot of success, and there were times they were actually beating the Jackson Five at their own game on the charts, because that's America for you. It's the way things were going. And at this point, Donny Osmond had started his solo career already. It had been 8 months since he released his first single as a solo Osmond, and released this really cheesy version of "Go Away, Little Girl," the hit that song
love that song.
Well, it was a number one hit for Steve Lawrence, and I loved it for Steve Lawrence. Oh, you love the Donny Osmond version?
Well, that's how old I was.
Makes sense. I understand that. You know what? I'm embarrassed to admit I owned that single too. But
I probably had it on an album, hon.
I bought the single, but the reason I bought the single, I have to understand now. You know how anal I am and how much of a weird... By 1971, I was religiously listening to the radio and getting every... listening to any song that became number one, I made it my business to buy every number one record. So from about...
Oh, so you had to have it.
Right. So
it was
from
a rule.
1971 to about 1973, for about 2 years, I made a point of buying every single number one 45 that existed. So this is one of those songs that I felt compelled to buy, even if I didn't like
it. Thank God you broke that rule.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're not kidding. I think I broke myself out of that one early.
Shoot.
But it was a number one song for Donny Osmond, obviously, as I had said. So it seemed like maybe this is a good idea to let Michael Jackson have a solo career after all, while maintaining his presence in the Jackson 5. That was sort of the idea. It wasn't breaking up the band, because Donny Osmond didn't break up the Osmond brothers. So this is an instance now of Jackson 5 copying their copiers, copying their imitators, so
right,
to speak. So they chose a song. But Berry Gordy wasn't too cool on the song that was being picked. In fact, he said flat out no. Four of the last five singles that were released by the Jackson 5 had been ballads. And they began to chart worse and worse. And so they began to think, why are we giving this kid a ballad? Let's find something more upbeat. But the songwriters and the producers were just intent on doing it. So they went back to remix the track, and it was the remix that finally sold Berry Gordy on the idea, and they released it. Unfortunately, they weren't as successful as Donnie. Michael only went to number four with this song.
Oh, darn.
But you know what? It's the whole point of this show is that time proves the winner. And not a lot of people are bothering to play Donny Osmond's version of Go Away, Little Girl anymore.
I bet you some people are.
Very, very, not much. You're not going to hear it on the radio much, that's for sure. But this song, you hear all the time. Michael Jackson's first 45 as a solo artist, called Got to Be There.
Got to be there. Got to be there. Be there now.
Michael Jackson, R.I.P. Michael.
I guess people decided to put aside the fact that he was 14 singing that he's got to be there in the morning for this girl.
Right.
I mean, but other than that, it's really a beautiful song.
That's what was so odd about Michael. He was actually somehow fundamentally believable, even though he was a kid. The circumstances are ridiculous. Of course it's ridiculous for a 14-year-old to sing that song. It was absurd for a 12-year-old to sing Never Can Say Goodbye. But those are definitive versions.
Yes.
His version actually is more definitive than the Isaac Hayes version of that song. Go figure that. That's unbelievable. Isaac Hayes, the guy who's one of the most incredible performers of love songs. And
you know,
I mean, turn off the light,
came
love
across
songs.
As very sincere when Michael Jackson sang something.
That's it. I think that's it.
That's what it comes across.
Excellent. I think you're exactly
despite
right.
Despite his age.
Michael just seemed sincere. You could trust him, said, okay, you know, fine. You know, that's what you say, Michael. We believe you. It's a nice thing.
Exactly.
Hey, maybe this is a good time as ever to mention not only that you are listening to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio called How Music Changed on WHPC 90.3 FM, coming to you on Nassau Community College out of Garden City, New York, but also that all of our shows are posted on the internet. If you want to hear them in their entirety or again or hear older shows to catch up on this series, it's all easily done. They're all saved for you on the internet. You can go to our websites and check them out anytime you wish. You can go to AmericanHitRadio.com, and today's show will be on the right side of the page. That's where the Friday show is. The left side of the page features our Wednesday program, American Hit Radio. You can see that the difference is maybe a little bit. Check it out. If you want to do that, the newest shows are right there on the top. If you want to dig a little bit deeper, well, you can click through on that site, AmericanHitRadio.com, or AmericanHitNetwork.com, both the same, take you to the same place, do the same thing. The other option is a fun one. You can go to our archive site, which is shut up and listen, shaddupandlisten.com. If you go there, we got about, boy, it's getting close to 400 shows that are posted there. The entire How Music Changed series and all of our Wednesday shows. So you could dedicate the rest of the year probably to just listening to the rest of our shows if you were so inclined. Well, check it out if you wish. They're there.
It's deep.
They're there for the asking. All you got to do is click on it, hear it on demand. All right. All that being said, let's get back to Motown, our 64th show dedicated to every single A-side, which it will end soon. We might have two more shows doing this before we kick it into high gear and speed our way out of Detroit, end up in Los Angeles for a little while, and then move on to our next subject matter. But our next track now is Diana Ross. And you know, I told you what the theme of the show is, about big stars having trouble. So, it's another Diana Ross single that charted poorly. Only number 63. On the pop charts, which is miserable. Number 40 on the R&B charts. There's a reason, though. She has an excuse.
All right, let's hear it.
This song was actually off of her first solo album. There'd already been a second solo album, that had come out. Uh-huh. The problem was, or the situation anyways, was that this song was released in Britain and it went to number one in
wow.
Britain. So it just seemed that it would be smart to release it in the U.S. if it did so well in Britain, being a number one song over there.
Right.
So it was a year later, unfortunately, which is the main reason that killed it. Like I said, a subsequent album, which also didn't help. So it was too late for it to matter here in the U.S.
Mm.
Well, they tried anyway, and those were the charts results we got. Here is the track, though, that did go to number one in Great Britain by Diana Ross called I'm Still Waiting.
And made me cry.
Diana Ross. I don't think under any circumstances in an American market that song would have gone to number one.
It's a good song, though.
Yeah, it is. But it doesn't have the hook that you'd expect from a number one song.
Yeah.
But I'm not certainly
saying
that
it's a bad song.
See,
the Brits don't need hooks.
Apparently not.
They don't need hooks or happy endings in movies.
You know what? Check this out. This is what's so incredible. Not only was it a number one song, well, it didn't even hit the top 40 here in America. Just barely. I mean, it reached number 40 on the R&B charts, which is bad showing, you know. But the song was re-released in Great Britain in the year 1991, 20 uh-huh. years later.
Yeah.
And it went to number 4.
Wow.
So
it's
just
got legs over there.
No, you're not kidding. Absolutely.
Just like Diana.
Yeah. 17. So anyway, Next artist up is a woman named Susie Aikida. Now, Susie's actually been with the label for a while. They signed her as a singer. Uh-huh. They brought her over to the label. She recorded a bunch of things, had high hopes of becoming an artist. And actually, she was part of the whole Holland Dozier Holland thing. And when they left, she kind of like was left high and dry.
A lot of people were floundering when they left.
Right. And that hurt her. So she ended up becoming like an assistant, a recording assistant,
uh-huh.
which was pretty much just her biding time at the label, waiting
to
see if things would happen.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah. She wasn't sure either. She was... I mean, she apparently was apparently very important with the Jackson 5 when they were recording. She was one of the people that was in the studio with them, working with...
doing like backing vocal type things.
Yeah, and helping with arrangements and things like that. Maybe even some engineering input. So she was seeing the recording...
process.
Right, from all sides. Thank you. Process. but That's except
for
being
I'm
on
here
the
for
right...
the keywords.
But she was always on the wrong side of the microphone.
Right.
Finally, years after she signed, maybe 5 years after she was signing with the label, she finally gets her own 45.
Wow.
So here it is, her first single with the label. And why they settled her with this song, I don't know. It's Susie Aikida singing Zippity Doo Dah.
Oh.
Sort of a Sly Stone vibe on that, right?
Yeah, I noticed that right at the end.
Didn't you say?
Yeah, definitely.
Susie Aikida is the name of the artist doing her version of Zippity Doodah from Motown. Well, I'm not sure if it was last week or the week before when we played that track by Tom Clay. He had released What the World Needs Now / Abraham Martin and John, the medley with all of the recordings of Ted Kennedy and Martin Luther King and all of that. And it was a surprise, huge hit. For him. And as such, this is actually his attempt at a follow-up hit. I mean, suddenly he is a hit artist instead of a DJ. So he actually wrote this next track, and he hired a Brill Building songwriter to help him. Artie Butler is the guy. Artie Butler actually did a lot of work with Lieber and Stoller as an arranger on a lot of their compositions. So Tom Clay figured that maybe bringing in the pros was going to help keep him relevant. I guess I don't need to tell you that is not the way it really worked out. It didn't matter. This track stiffed. In fact, it didn't chart at all anywhere, sorry to say. but you get to hear it now, perhaps for the first time in 38 years. Here's
and
Tom.
Maybe the last.
Right. Tom Clay. The name of the song is Whatever Happened to Love.
I'd like to ask you a question. Maybe you can give me an answer. Or maybe you're looking for it yourself. Whatever happened to the child in us? Where did he go? Do you remember rolling in a tire? Walking with tin cans on your heels? Flipping bubblegum cards? A swimming hole called B.A.B. Whatever happened to hide-go-seek? What was it you'd say? Holy, holy, in free. Remember nights on your front porch playing initials of movie stars? For that matter, whatever happened to porches or the railing you jump off into a pile of leaves? Whatever happened to laughing, to loving? Speaking of love, do you remember the excitement of your first love?
Roll up.
Remember skipping stones on water? Whatever happened to when it would rain, you'd build a little dam in the street and wade barefooted and make little boats out of matchsticks and paper? Whatever happened to sugar sandwiches? You'd put butter on a slice of bread and pour sugar over it. Do you remember, if I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times? Remember catching bees in a jar or catching lightning bugs? Whatever happened to Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy? Rubber band guns you'd make yourself, the haunted house on your street? Do you remember breaking a bottle of milk and being afraid to go home? Who invented stuffed shirts? Whatever happened to saving tinfoil in a great big ball? Starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight. Wish I may, wish I might, have the wish I wish tonight. What'd you wish? Can't tell you, 'cause if I do, it won't come true. Whatever happened to good night, stars, I love you? Or once upon a time, oh, so long ago? Or now I lay me down to sleep? Whatever happened to the child that used to be me?
Oh, poor Tom Clay.
Thank God we'll only hear that once.
Well, I don't know. It could have been. I could see how he would have had high hopes for it, thinking that it was going to be some like a way to touch on emotion, the way that his first single did. But he goes, you know, hey, the pop audience is fickle. What can you
That's
do?
That's right.
I could say how this next song also falls into that category of like, you know, fallen superstars. It's not really fair, though. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles had this song picked for release, but then it was held back. So it was not released in favor of another song that we're going to get to in just a short bit. So in interest of playing literally every Motown A-side, even if it was pulled from release, if it was assigned a number, we've got it. So we're playing it. So here's a song that almost was released, but wasn't. So therefore, there's no chart position here at all to mention. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles performing When Sundown Comes.
Things can change, even the mountains can change. Oh, sundown comes round over and over again. Oh, in life, sometimes sunshine can be washed away by the rain. Oh, but when sundown comes, I can't say, Lord, I done made it
she laughed and took her love away. I never thought today I'd be okay enough to say, huh, it's all over.
Almost hard for me to understand why they might have even pulled it. I guess it's because I'm such a big Smokey Robinson and Miracles
you
fan.
Are.
You know, you hear that and you're like, that sounded great. That could have been a hit. I don't know. Maybe not in 1971. It's hard to say. Maybe they were right. Anyway, that's the way it went down. Well, we have another hit to play now. This one we do know. Actually, Heidi. This is the Temptations this time. Now, keep in mind, they had recently lost, David Ruffin had been gone for a little while now. And they just recently lost Eddie Kendricks as well, both to solo careers, both feeling, okay, I've had enough of being with the Temptations. I'm enough of a star on my own right now to move on. So, as you recall, Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong were writing almost all of their material. Norman Whitfield is producing almost everything for the Temptations, doing a better job of keeping them relevant than almost any other artist
on the label.
Really, I mean, the three most relevant artists at this time would be the Temptations, Stevie Wonder, and Marvin Gaye, the ones who are pretty much guaranteed still stars. But the Temps are having trouble because they lost their two big star lead singers.
Yeah.
So what does Norman Whitfield do? He writes a song called Superstar, Remember How You Got Where You Are, and
Ooh.
Then has the Temptations sing it.
Good one.
Now,
In your face.
Right, exactly. You know, knowing how Norman Whitfield worked, it would be no surprise to think that he wrote this deliberately. Now, he didn't say that he did, but he absolutely didn't say that he didn't. And a number of the Temptations said that's exactly what he was doing, and he knew it as well. So they sang the song, and they released it maybe as a parting shot to their two lead singers. It was the first Temptations single to feature both Richard Street and new member Damon Harris on vocals. Here's the Temptations with Superstar.
Long
That's number 18 on the pop charts.
You
back
can't
in
beat
71.
Those harmonies.
Really?
They're hot.
They do great. Number 8 on the R&B charts, too, by the way. Well, I mentioned that the last single that we played, just before, the track previous to that track, was by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. That was the track that was pulled. Well, here's the track that caused the label to pull that track, and they released this one instead.
Better be good.
So you judge. Decide which one you think would have sounded more commercial. As it turns out, this one did chart at only number 49 on the pop charts, but it did go to number 7 on the R&B charts. Fairly significant. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles making a return appearance here with a track called Satisfaction. That was the hit. I got to say, Motown did the right thing.
Yeah,
that was a great song.
They called that one.
Number 7 R&B hit, deserved it. Really gorgeous Smokey Robinson there. And the Miracles, of course, singing Satisfaction. Now, I've got time for one more track. Before I give you the information on that, before I get to that, I would at least like to say one thing. I understand it here that Bob Levinson has been unable to finish his show, to maintain his show. Of course, dedicated to Bob Dylan for 2 hours. And I've gotten to know Bob and Arlene really well over the past few years, coming in here doing their show. And I just want to say on air that I'm going to miss them both very dearly. They're great people. They had a great show. And I really wish both Bob and Arlene all the best in the world. It was wonderful working with them. And I just hope everything in their life that they can get what they wish. I hope things come together. I know that Bob was having some difficulty balancing the show and work. In the later days, and that's why he was having trouble getting in here And if anybody wants to send any, you know, good wishes to them, of course, you can send them through me. I'll be sure to forward them as best I can. But I just wanted to send a lot of love out to both Bob and Arlene and wish them the best. And also say welcome to the show that's going to be coming in, replacing them. Apparently, the Ultrasound Lounge, a show that was actually begun by our very own Mike Tejan a number of years back, is going to be following us on Fridays on the schedule for the time being. So I'm looking forward to that. So stay tuned. Okay, meanwhile, we've got time for one more track. The artist is Tony and Carolyn. This is the dreaded medley single, Heidi. I know you hate medleys.
Kiss of death.
Tony and Carolyn, they're very Carpenters-like. Carolyn even played drums, if you could imagine, right? As an interesting aside, too, the medley is of a Carpenter song. We've only just begun with a Jackson 5 song, I'll Be There. Kind of merge the two together. An interesting aside, though, We've Only Just Begun was actually came to life initially. It was written as a bank commercial. I don't know if you knew that. Richard Carpenter heard the commercial and decided to record it with his sister. The rest is history. Right? Became their first huge hit. Although this one was originally a bank commercial. Here it is. This is where the history stops. Tony and Carolyn with their medley version of We've Only Just Begun, I'll Be There. And it's where we stop too. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you all next week. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
I'll be there. We've only just begun.
I'll be there.
Too late.
I'll be there.
Too late.
Why
lies and promises?
A kiss for like a moon.
Go
my way.
I'll be there.
Before the rising sun.
I'll be there.
We fly. Start out walking and learn to run.
Yes, we've just begun.
Sharing horizons that are new to us. Watching the signs along the way. Talking it over, just the two of us. Working together day to day.
Together we just begun.
You and I most
together.